Sadhguru, I have before me this, the sutra, one is the of the chapter 212. It says, yoga is ability to direct the mind exclusively towards an object and sustain that direction without any distractions. This is what Patanjali wrote in his second, in his first 1.2 sutra. What does it mean really? Directing the mind exclusively towards an object. Which object? And sustain that direction without any distractions. Which directions and how do you sustain it?
See, this is called, what you're referring to is called dharana, okay?
Right.
Dharana means there is you and an object.
Right.
And you're entirely focused on it.
Right.
If you focus yourself absolutely on it, after some time it'll so happen, only you are there or only the object is there. This is called dhyana. This is the next stage of focus. If after some time, if this happens, if you can hold the state of dhyana, then it becomes neither you are there nor the object is there. Some other huge presence is there.
Mm.
This is called samadhi.
Ah.
So this is progressive states of practice.
I see.
So when we say hold your attention on any object, people think they have to worship a god, they have to do this or that. No. You can focus on a flower, a leaf, a grain of sand, a worm, it doesn't matter. But something, if you want to hold your attention on something, it must inspire a certain level of passion and emotion, then only it stays there. See, right now, why is it so difficult for children or students to keep their attention on the textbook? But their emotions are fired up, there is a girl in the neighborhood, you don't have to tell him, think about her. He keeps focused. So because there is a certain emotion behind it.
Right.
So the reason why the various forms of gods came in is just this. Whatever you can relate to, maybe you can't relate to the existing god, so you take this one. If this is not working for you, take another one. If none of them are working for you, you create your own. This is called Ishtadevata. The idea is, unless you hold something really high and really attractive for you, you can't hold your focus. If you concentrate on something that you're not interested in, it will exhaust you. It will not enhance you. Only when you're absolutely grabbed by something, if you're really grabbed by something, suddenly you find the focus will enhance you, not exhaust you.
Right.
See, this is as simple as going to a cinema or reading a book, okay?
Right.
See, you read a textbook. Textbook is written for average intelligence. In spite of that, 10 times you read, you don't get it. You lie down in your bed at 70 pages per hour, you read a love story or a suspense, you remember every word of it. Because it must inspire that passion, otherwise concentration becomes a concentration camp within yourself.
Right.
It becomes suffering.
There is a sutra, 114, the 14th sutra of chapter 1. I want you to make those people who are going to listen to your guidance and wisdom, please explain, the sutra is 114. It is only when the correct practice is followed for a long time without interruptions and with a quality of positive attitude and eagerness that it can succeed. What do you mean by correct practice? Long time without interruption and quality of positive attitude and eagerness. Can you explain to listeners who will be listening to you?
See, when we say correctness of practice, this must be understood. What you're dealing with is, when you say human mechanism, it is the most sophisticated gadget on the planet. There isn't another one which is more sophisticated than this one. You must agree with me, isn't it?
Yes.
Whatever gadget supercomputers we have are nowhere comparable to the human system. Everything that we have done is actually inferior to who we are as a mechanism.
Yes.
So this is a highly sophisticated mechanism. Everything that you do with it, every sound that you utter, every position that you take, every movement of your hand or leg or thought, whatever you do, there are a whole lot of complex things happening. So the practice is designed in such a way that you are trying to direct this whole life process that you call as myself into a certain direction about crossing the existing dimension of life and going somewhere. See, suppose you want to fly, all right?
Yes.
human beings have wanted to fly because they saw the birds flying and they wanted to fly. Many people flapped their arms and they said, okay, this is not possible for us because we don't have wings. But still the passion of I want to fly because this is a different dimension. Walking is one dimension, but flying is a completely different dimension.
Right.
So to achieve this, we had to have wings.
Yes.
But then somebody discovered, if you propel yourself at a certain speed, even with a little wing, you can fly. We did not break the laws of nature. We just understood the laws of nature better. That is why we are able to fly, isn't it?
Yes.
See, it's not by breaking the laws of nature we are flying.
Right.
We grasp the laws of nature better, that is why we are able to fly.
Yes.
We are not flying against the gravity, we are using it to fly. So,
just in the technology.
Yes. The technology is just this. The technology is a certain sophisticated understanding of the existing laws of nature. Nothing has changed. Thousand years ago, what the laws of nature were, it's the same laws. Then they could not fly, now we can fly. It's a better understanding of the laws of nature. So when we say correctness of practice, the correctness of practice has been arrived at a very sophisticated understanding about the laws that govern this human mechanism.
Yes.
You cannot alter those things because they are fundamental. You cannot change it because that's the way creation is.
Correct.
Now, once you have grasped a certain practice in its fundamental nature correctly, then there are many ways. As you are saying, because you are referring to the sutras,
yes.
Sutra means a thread. See, nobody wears a garland for the sake of the thread.
Right.
You wear it for the sake of the flowers or the pearls or the diamonds or whatever you put on it.
Absolutely.
But without a thread, there is no garland.
That's right.
So you cannot change the thread. Thread has to be there. There is no other way.
Right.
But you can... Right now, if you get jasmine, you can put jasmine on it. Tomorrow, if you get sampangi, you can put sampangi on it. This depends upon a particular master or a guru who adds a certain type of flower, a certain type of bead or whatever is relevant to him or to people around him. But the fundamental sutra does not change. So when we talk about the correctness of practice, we are talking about not doing anything which is contradictory to the fundamental sutra. Or another way of understanding this is, it is a basic formula. Formula, can, H2O cannot change, that's the way it is. But there are many ways to arrive at H2O.
Right.
We can form the same water in a million different ways,
right.
But the fundamental formula of H2O does not change. A sutra means it's like a formula, you can't change the fundamental. Correctness of the practice depends on this, whether it's in line with the law or not. If it's not in line with the law, it will produce skewed impacts on your system.
Sadhguru, in Sutra 19 of the Chapter 1, Patanjali says, there will be some who are born in a state of yoga. They need not practice or discipline themselves. Is it a fact that some are born in a yoga, born in the state of yoga?
Yes, but if I say this, a whole lot of people will immediately say, those who have never bent their body once, they've gotten into all kinds of shapes. They'll say, okay, I was not born in yoga, this is not for me. So that is not it. Everybody can grow into yoga, all right?
What made Patanjali, the guru of yoga, say this?
When Patanjali says they are born in a certain state of yoga, you must understand the thing, yoga is not a practice. Yoga means you're in a state of union. That is, when you experience everything as myself.
Right.
How is this possible? See, right now the only thing that is differentiating between what you consider as myself and what you consider as the other is just your sensory boundaries, okay?
Right.
The food which was a part of this planet yesterday, you ate it yesterday and today it's become a part of you, isn't it?
That's right.
That which was not a part of you has become a part of you. Most people do not get this point unless they're cremated, you know?
Yes.
So, this if you understand that what is not you can become you if you are willing to include it into the boundaries of your sensation,
yes.
Then yoga becomes instantly relevant to you because now the whole yogic system is about enhancing your perception.
Mm.
Enhancing your perception will only happen with inclusion because there is no other way. Because everything that you experience is only within you. See, now I'm speaking to you, you think it's coming through, it may be coming through the telephone to you, but The way you hear it within you is the only way you know it, isn't it?
Yes.
See, when I speak here, it's my voice. When it's on the wire or it's in the waves, it is not in my voice. My voice is not flowing from Coimbatore to Delhi, all right? It is in some other form.
Yes.
So suppose you will put your phone down and listen to the waves, you know nothing, because that's not in your perception.
Right.
But the moment it enters your ears and that wave is again transmitted into... The moment it enters your telephone and again transmitted in the form of a voice, only then you can perceive it. Enhancing your perception means expanding the scope of your perception, because only what you perceive you know. Rest is all imagination.
Yes.
So yogic sciences are essentially focused on enhancing your perception,
yes,
not on enhancing your knowledge, not on enhancing your belief system, just enhancing your perception, because that's the only and only way you can know. So when we say yoga, when we say union, we're talking about enhancing our perception. Right now, you can feel what's happening within your body, at least partly. If you enhance your perception that if you sit here, what happens in the universe, you know, this is yoga.
Yes.
This is a science of enhancing your perception, because
yes,
that's the only thing that gives you true experience. Rest is all psychological space.
Sadhguru, there's absolutely a follow-up to what you're saying. He said the five activities of yoga, of mental activities are comprehension, misapprehension, imagination, deep sleep, and memory. Is that it, or is there anything more? And does right practice make you aware of the challenges all each one of them produces?
See, the five main perceptions, the centers of perception in the mind are sleep, imagination, memory, right perception, and perversion. Okay?
I mean,
it's said in different words, but this is what it means.
That's right.
If you give the same input to two different people, those two different people will do two different things with it.
Mm.
So you can see this very clearly if you brought up two children in your home.
Yes.
Same genetics, same parentage, same school, same atmosphere, same food, same everything.
Yes.
But you see one goes in this direction, another goes in another direction.
Yes.
The same given inputs, people can do two different things depending upon how they receive it.
Yes.
So yoga is trying to fix that you always receive through the right center, that is the center of right perception.
Yes.
If the same thing comes to everybody has perversions, okay?
Yes.
Perversion is not, when I'm not saying it in a negative sense, perversion means a modification of what you have perceived, not seeing things the way they are.
Yes.
A whole lot of art and music and so many things are the creation of perversion. I'm using the word perversion not in a negative sense.
Right.
Perverse means it is different from what you have perceived. So you perceived something and from that you made something else out of it.
Right.
This can work very positively in one person. In another person it can be very negative. But whichever way it is, for one who wants to know, it is important he perceived through right perception. That means without filters. There is something called as memory and imagination. You are who you are only because of what you remember. Suppose we wipe out your memory, you don't know you're Kiran Bedi, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
You don't know you're a police person.
Yes.
If we just take off your memory.
Yes.
So you are who you are only because of a vast bank of memory that you carry, out of which over 99% is unconscious memory. In the sense, right now, if your face looks like your father's or your mother's, it is not a conscious memory, it's an unconscious memory which is working.
Right.
What happened 1,000,000 years ago, your forefathers, still the memory of that is working through your body, so largely 99% or more is unconscious memory. So that memory is fueling a certain dimension of imagination. All your imagination is not coming from conscious memory. It is also coming from unconscious memory data that you have within you.
Right.
So why one person imagines one way, another person imagines another way, even if you put them through the same educational process, is because there's a whole bank of unconscious memory which makes him think and imagine things in a completely different way. So this memory and imagination is what humanity is unfortunately suffering right now.
Right.
What happened 10 years ago, they still suffer. What may happen day after tomorrow, they already suffer. So this is happening. Because they have lost control over their basic faculties of memory and imagination.
That brings me to one more. And he said, when he said, Sadhguru, by regular inquiry into the role of the senses, we can reduce mental distortions. What do we mean by regular inquiry into the role of the senses? What is this inquiry?
See, Kiran, I have to admit one thing with you. I have never read the Yoga Sutras. I'm glad you have read it. If I have the
Sadhguru,
time, I close my eyes and studied my own system.
Sadhguru, you know, many times I read, I photo it on my iPad and tweet it to my friends on the Twitter. I love doing this in the morning as nutrition.
If I have time, I only close my eyes and sit because there can be no yoga beyond my own system. That is true for every human being. Because all books were written by human beings.
You were born in yoga. You don't need to read it, Sadhguru.
No.
You wouldn't have been here today without having been born in it.
So anyway, the question that you ask now about inquiring into the senses.
Yes.
See, today, just today morning, I addressed the neurosurgeons of the world. In Coimbatore,
right.
They had a big conference and I just spoke to them in the morning.
Yes.
See, today neurology is going about proving in so many ways that the things that you see, the things that you hear, the things that you smell and taste and touch, they are not the way you think they are.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm.
So, in the yogic terminology, we said the way you're experiencing the world is all Maya. The world is not Maya. The way you're experiencing it is Maya.
Uh-huh.
That means the word Maya is seen as illusion. When we say an illusion, we are not saying the world does not exist. We are saying it's not the way you think it is.
Mm.
If you were a grasshopper, you would see the world entirely differently, isn't it?
That's right.
If you were an earthworm, your experience of the world would be entirely different. I'm saying the very way you see light and darkness is different from creature to creature, isn't it?
Two people seeing the same movie interpreted differently.
No, that's a matter of opinion and stuff. I'm saying what is light for one creature is darkness for another creature.
Yeah.
And vice versa, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So your sense organs are attuned for your survival. So if your survival is all you're seeking, your sense organs are fine. But if you're seeking to know the nature of life, then sense organs are not good enough. So you have to go on inquiring and refining your sense perception, that you go on seeing what it is not.
How?
It is showing
How
you
do we
things.
Do that?
It is showing you things the way it is necessary for survival.
How do we do that?
See, for example, I will tell you. For example, you touch something around you right now. Let's say there is a glass or something. You touch a glass, it feels cool to you. It feels cool to you does not mean you know how it is.
Mm.
You know it only by comparison.
Right.
Because your body temperature is in a certain way.
Right. Absolutely.
You think this is cool.
Yes.
Suppose we make your body temperature half of what it is,
mm.
and then if you touch it, it will feel warm to you.
Yes. Yes.
So whatever you perceive through sense organs,
yes.
you're perceiving only in comparison. Mm. What you know by comparison is not reality. It is only distortion of reality,
right.
useful for survival process, not useful for knowing. So inquiring, see, where you're a police person, if inquiry means what to you? Questioning, isn't it?
Yes, interrogation.
No, don't go that far.
That too with a stick.
Don't go with the lathi and all that now. Enquiry essentially means you're questioning.
Yes.
So you're questioning what you see.
Repeat.
Right now you see this is red.
Hmm.
Something is red not because it's red. Today we know if you see an object as red, it is not red.
Yeah.
In reality it is not red.
Yes.
Dogs don't see colors, do you know? Did you ever dress up for your dog?
No.
You should try. He just looks at you disinterested.
Only the bull sees red.
Don't dress up for the bull, okay?
But the bull sees red.
if you see red, it is red not because its color is red. It is just that it withholds all the six formats of color and reflects red.
That's true.
Whatever it is not is what you see it as. Do you understand?
Yes.
See, it is not red, it is rejecting red, and that's why you see it as red.
Yes.
So like this, you inquire into your senses, constantly inquire into your senses, because there are so many distortions your senses are doing for the purpose of your survival. So if survival is not the goal of your life, you're looking as to, you want to know the nature of life, nature of the existence in which you live and your own existence, then you have to inquire. Being a policewoman, don't use the lathi, just inquire, just learn to question them.
When can we ever reach that stage as it's, this is my last question. It says, can the mind reach a state when it has no impressions of any sort? Can it be open, clear and simply transparent?
See, when we use the word, English word, mind, it is not being specific as to which dimension of the mind. In the yogic way of looking, there are 12 different states of mind or 16 different states of mind, but we can reduce it to 4 for the sake of simple understanding. These are referred to as buddhi, manas, ahankara and chitta. Buddhi is your intellect. Intellect is like a knife.
Right.
The sharper it is, the better it is. But right now people are cutting themselves up with their intellect. All the suffering that people are causing is entirely because their intellect is sharp and they're cutting themselves up. They don't know how to hold a knife in their hand, you know.
That's all
it is. But this intellect cannot function unless there is a bank of memory. So in yoga, we don't see that the mind is only in your brain, or manas is not in your brain. There is a manomaya kosha. Entire body carries memory. Memory is there in every cell of your body. Otherwise, it could not be what it is, all right?
That's a fact.
Tremendous amount of memory. So there is a manomaya kosha which supports the intellect. If there is no memory, suddenly you will find your intellect is no good. Because without the information, your intellect cannot determine anything, because intellect is mainly the power of discrimination and deciphering things. It can dissect everything. To dissect and make a judgment, you need a certain bank of memory. Or in other words, whichever kind of intellect you have, it's a certain kind of prejudice. You understand?
Yes.
Because it is coming from a limited amount of memory.
Yes.
Now you believe I am an Indian. It's a certain kind of prejudice.
Yes.
Right now, this prejudice is needed to for the larger well-being of the people, so we take that stand within ourselves, but all your memory and identity is built around this. With this, the intellect becomes a certain tool.
Yes.
Behind that is ahankara. Ahankara does not mean ego. Ahankara means identity.
Right.
Whatever you identify yourself,
right,
it is around this identity your mind organizes yourself. As I already said, now, for example, you say, I'm an Indian. Immediately, Indian flag, national flag goes up and emotions rise. And it's genuine, it's not acting. It's genuine that tears will come to our eyes.
Yes.
Suppose you crossed over to the other side of the... You cross over to the other side of the border and you identified with that. And that flag will create similar emotions within you, isn't it?
Yes.
So, identity is something that we have consciously taken on.
Yes.
But for most people, it has happened unconsciously.
Yes.
So it is our making.
Yes.
If you unmake this, if you hold your identity consciously, absolutely consciously, it will, your mind will act around that when you want to. Otherwise, if you drop this identity and sit here, mind will become utterly still. Once you have identified yourself with something that you are not in reality, existentially what you are not, whether you identify with your body or the body of the nation or the body of education or culture or family or whatever, the moment you identify yourself with that which you are not existentially, immediately mind becomes a non-stop activity.
Right.
It's like you ate bad food and you have loose motion.
Yes.
You can't stop it.
Yes.
You must stop eating bad food first.
Yes.
So if you stop identifying with that which you are not, you do not identify with that which you are not, so suddenly you will find mind is like a clear mirror, reflects everything, and that's what it's supposed to do. Right now, its opinions, your psychological space has become more important than the existential universe that we are living in, simply because the distortions of the mind are giving you such a complex kaleidoscope of images within your mind, you've forgotten what reality is causing this. You know, as a child, you must have looked through the kaleidoscope. Isn't it just three mirrors arranged in a triangle and you put a few pieces of something? You put two pieces, it becomes 2 million, you know?
Yes.
So this is what is happening because of the identification. It is the identification which we are calling as ahankara. The identification is held consciously, loosely, and you can keep it down when you have to. If you can do that, you will see your mind will become a shining, proper, plain mirror so that it clearly shows what is outside. You will see it the way it is. Right now, you will see it the way it is convenient for you or your identity. Thank you, Kiran.
Thank you
Namaskaram
so much.
Namaskaram to you. Namaskaram.
Thank you so much. Thank
Namaskaram.
You.